Welcome to tonight's political forum on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and now at 95.5 FM. Tonight's broadcast on WFIN, presented by Sinks Flower Shop and Greenhouse.
Good evening from the University of Findlay, and welcome to tonight's Findlay City Council at-large candidate forum, or I guess I should say good afternoon, as we're going a little earlier than normal. Our event sponsored by The Courier, UFTV, and 1330 WFIN. I'm WFIN News Director Doug Jenkins. I'll serve as co-moderator for today's forum, along with The Courier's Steve Dillon. Our participants for this afternoon are Matthias LaGuire, Grant Russell, Tom Schindeldecker, and Jeff Wobser. Let's give them a round of applause. All right, now that we have that out of the way, we'll ask you to hold applause until the end of today's forum. Our ground rules work like this. Steve and I have selected the questions for the forum. The candidates are not aware of what will be asked or any order of questions. Our ground rules also include each candidate giving a two-minute opening statement, and we'll follow that with our question and answer session. Each candidate gets 60 seconds to answer. We can follow up questions to individual candidates or to the group as a whole. Candidates get 60 seconds to answer any follow-up questions that Steve and I have. And if a candidate is called into question by another candidate, we can give the candidate who's been called into question 60 seconds for a rebuttal. We will allow you to finish a thought, but please don't take advantage of it after the timer goes off, or we'll be forced to cut you off. Before tonight's forum, we drew numbers to determine who would give the first opening statements. Matthias LaGuire drew number one, and he'll give the first opening statement of today.
Thank you. Good evening. I would like to thank The Courier, WFIN, the University of Findlay, Mr. Dillon and Mr. Jenkins for this opportunity. This is a neat auditorium here. I haven't been here before. It's really nice. My family and I attend Findlay First Assembly of God Church over on Ash Avenue. And I would like to extend an open invitation to everyone or anyone who would be interested in Easter breakfast this Sunday at 9 a.m. It's at 124 Ash Avenue, and we'll have a Resurrection Sunday service after that. I'm proud to be from Findlay, Ohio, and to call it my home. I'm motivated to run for city council by a desire to see all citizens represented fairly by a city council that provides transparency for their actions. The recent passage of unjust legislation and lack of accountability is deeply troubling, and those actions encourage me to run for office in order to protect the community. That is why I am running for city council at large.
I prematurely took a seat. Mr. Russell?
Good afternoon. Thank you to WFIN, The Courier, and the University of Findlay for once again hosting this session. I always appreciate the opportunity to talk about the city, because I believe the city has a pretty good story to share, and I'm honored to serve all of the citizens of Findlay and helping write that story. Campaigns are interesting. You hear the word I a lot in campaigns. I did this, I'm gonna do that, I. But it's not about I, it's about us, it's about we, it's about the workforce, the administration, community partners. Nothing gets done by one person working alone. As you listen tonight, listen to how often you hear the word I. To be effective on council, you must have a broader view than just I, or broader view of than just oneself. And there's simply no place for self-interest when representing all of the citizens. Not only that, it also takes teamwork, and then hard work, and then homework, a lot of homework. Reading 150 pages of Ordinance 2019-15, digging into the Ohio Revised Code, which tells municipalities what they can and cannot do. Reaching out to work with everyone you can, city employees, supervisors, the mayor and her administration, community and business groups, and citizens who simply want to know what's going on or simply want results. It also takes sound judgment to make what you believe is the best informed decision for all of the citizens of Findlay. And you soon learn that best decisions don't always have the loudest supporters. In fact, they rarely do. Lastly, it takes strength and conviction to stick with your decisions, sometimes in the face of those loud voices. I'm excited to have the conversations tonight to talk about the hard work and the teamwork, the accomplishments and the successes that we've enjoyed, and the challenges that we face. Thank you.
Mr. Wobser.
Good evening, Doug, and thank you very much for this opportunity again. The Courier, WFIN, and UFTV do a great job in hosting this event, and it's certainly appreciated. My name is Jeff Wobser. I'm running for my third term as councilman at large. I was born and raised in Findlay, Ohio, and lived here until 1980 when I took off and went to the University of Tennessee. After that, I went to work for Marathon. I've been with Marathon for 30 years. In 2000, my family and I moved back to Findlay, and I took over as head swim coach for the swim team because that was one of my first goals, was to come back to Findlay and take over a program that gave me an awful lot to give back to them. 4 years ago, I decided to go ahead and run for office on city council. That was in the same reason I did that was the same reason I took over the swim program, was I wanted to make sure that the city continues to be a great place to live, work, and raise a family for a long time, because that was the opportunity that I was given and my family was given, and I want to make sure that families and people for much longer had the same opportunity. Grant really put things together well. Doing this job is difficult. Sometimes what you see, if you're one of the few people that watch council meetings on Tuesday nights on television, sometimes it looks pretty easy and it looks pretty quick. But quite honestly, that is just a culmination of a lot of things that happen behind the scenes. To be an effective council person, you've got to do a lot of homework and a lot of work before you get to the council meeting. My main area of expertise or place I like to dig into is the numbers, and that's why I'm on the Appropriations Committee, and make sure that we spend our dollars as best we can so that we can continue to be fiscally solvent and continue to move forward in that direction. Thank you very much.
Mr. Schindeldecker.
Thank you. I join with the other candidates in expressing thanks for the university, for the Findlay Publishing Company, and for others who were involved in this, and also for you, to you, for being here to hear what we have to say. And I'm sure they would join me also in expressing our support for the people of France and sadness at what happened yesterday. I'm sure people of all denominations and all faiths around the world would join together in that. I'm not going to talk about the teamwork. Certainly it exists. We've talked about that before. That's going to come up along with all the issues as we proceed in this session. I'm going to talk instead about this book. It's called Our Towns. It's written by James and Deborah Fellows. They're a husband and wife journalism team who spent many years and over 100,000 miles traveling across the United States following the recession of 2002 to see how communities had coped and rebounded from that. Some communities didn't. Some are still in the process. Others thrived. Among those that thrived, this book enumerates about 10 or 11 different signs of civic success. People working together, an ability to pick out the leaders who will bring about that that change. The phrase public-private partnership really means something real. People know about their community. They have downtowns, including, believe it or not, considering some of the what we've heard elsewhere, so some of the pedestrian problems, a research university, a community college, many things such as that. And that's what I'd like to focus on, where we are and where we can go from this point on.
Okay, that concludes our opening statement. Steve Dillon will ask the first two questions of today's forum.
Okay, we're going to start off with a budget question. The city budget appears to be on solid ground, even though a deficit budget has been forecast for this year. What would you do to see that the city continues to live within its means in the future? We'll start with you, Mr. Russell.
A remarkable thing has happened in Findlay City government during the last 5 or 6 years. You have a government that has money in the bank and doesn't just automatically spend it. The see it, spend it cycle has been broken. It's been broken because of the trust that's been built up between the municipal workers, the administration, and the staff. And it's what has been really a key to our economic success. As a result, during the fourth quarter of the year, as departments look at their budgets, they don't think, gosh, I got to spend it, because if I don't spend it, I won't get as much next year. In fact, they continue to make solid fiscal decisions. So, and then we use that balance in order to leverage that money for more opportunities. Maintaining that trust is the key, Steve.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Wobser?
My answer will be similar to Grant's in that we have to continue to have a good relationship with the department heads of the city and the unions and with the police and fire unions. It's used to be that if the city had money left over, that was a bargaining chip that was used against the city when it came time to negotiate contracts for our safety departments. That is not the case now. And because of that, that allows us to keep money in the bank, which a lot of people may not know that by having money in the bank and having extra cash on hand, it allows us to save money going forward because Brian, our head engineer, can get projects bid out early, which allows us to get a cost savings by getting those out early. Our job as council members is to make sure that we continue in that path.
Okay, Mr. Schindeldecker.
Just as Grant mentioned the word leverage, I has underlined leverage, which I put down on my notes. Absolutely. I didn't know what leverage was when we were talking about all the scandal on Wall Street. I know what leverage means today, and believe me, it means a lot. Not only, as Jeff said, can we bid out projects early, sometimes the contractor will come and say, now I know this sounds like the South Carolina people that come up and want to do your driveway. We finished a project. We have another one starting in 2 weeks. We've got a crew right here. If you can come up with X number of dollars, we will give you a real bargain doing another street or so. That happens a lot, and that means a lot. We've also been able to take advantage of things such as the aviation department. We have money for a new runway. X City does not have the matching funds. If you can match our funds, we will put a new runway in at your airport. This is one of the greatest advantages of the budget situation we're in today.
Thank you. Mr. LeGuire?
Could you repeat the question, please?
I sure can. The city budget appears to be on solid ground, even though a deficit budget has been forecast for this year. What would you do to see that the city continues to live within its means in the future?
Well, myself, as the head of my household, we do our best to live within our means, and our only debt right now is our mortgage. So I feel that I have done it in my personal life, and I would continue to manage the budget the way I would do my own, where I think that as far as new spending, it's better to look at what you have and see if it's something you can mend before we would look at building something new. You know, as if you were running your own budget at home. You don't just tear down your house and build a new one when you have a leaky roof or something. You maintain what you have. And I think it would be a good idea if we maintain what we have before we look to new projects and more spending.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll move on to a little bit of city planning here. Last week we got some very good news. A developer is planning to invest $31 million in downtown Findlay to build on the former Argyle site. If the city sells the parking lot behind the property to the Port Authority, do you have major questions about this proposal, and how would you vote on it once you have those answers? We'll start with you, Jeff.
Yes, I've got questions. And we're not going to get started with that tonight, I don't believe. But we're going to have a committee of the whole meeting in the next couple of weeks to get into the details on this. My concern with this, from the taxpayer standpoint and from our job is to watch out for the taxpayer, is if we do go through with this sale, what are the assurances that we have that this project's going to come to fruition? What happens if we get halfway through the project and we've sold this parking lot, which we all know parking is sparse downtown, it's something that we have to have. What happens if the project goes belly up? Does he maintain that property? Do we get it back? These are things that I want to look at the contract that we'll ultimately do with the Port Authority and the Port Authority to the contractor to make sure that the citizens of Findlay are safe and will be covered in the event of a project that doesn't go through.
Okay. Mr. Schindeldecker?
I would agree. I would definitely vote in favor of the project, but I would have many of the same concerns that have been expressed. And parking is primary. That's the first thing that that I talked about when we were given a somewhat of an advanced look at what this might be. We have to maintain the parking. If we lose one more space on Main Street downtown, the community will probably come up in an uprising. That has got to be guaranteed. And as Jeff said, we need an ironclad agreement that we will do what we intend to do on the project.
Okay, thank you. Mr. LeGuire?
Well, first of all, I think that if the parking lot that the city owns would ever go out of the hands of the city, I think that we need a lot of information. It generates revenue for the city. So if we no longer have that, that goes to the parking enforcement. If we no longer have that, we'll even be able to afford parking enforcement. I also, if the city were to no longer have it, I think that a public auction is the only acceptable way to do it, to make the property available to everyone. That would be the fair thing to do. I would hate to see a precedent set where the Housing Authority takes over the property and the city it shows favoritism towards one developer. I think that the public auction would be the best way to go. And if we set a precedent for that, what's to happen with where the Hostetler building is on Main Cross? Is that also going to be given away to whatever developer wants to spend the most money? So I'd love to see it developed.
Okay, thank you. Grant?
What exciting news. $31 million development in downtown. We've been working on the Argyle block ever since it burned. And yeah, there's a lot of questions to be answered. And we would not sell the parking lot until we are guaranteed that the project is going to go forward. Jeff raises very good points about assurances that once started, once the parking lot is taken out of commission, that the project does complete. We have, I think, about 58 spots in the current parking lot. 25 to 30 of them have long-term leases and are not available for public use. In the new facility, I believe they're talking 52 to 55 spaces available for public use. I do not believe it would have to be determined if we would use the long-term leases on those. I'd see it as a net gain for parking for downtown.
Okay, thank you.
This year, the city.
All right.
All right, the radio guy's a little loud. I apologize. This year, the city could incur major expenses in updating its water and sewer meters. How do you think that bill should be paid, by issuing more debt or through the cash reserves in the utility funds? Mr. Wobser, we'll start with you.
I'm sure you want to start with me? I started the last one.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, you're right. Mr. Schindeldecker.
Our water and sewer funds are among the healthiest we have in the city. And I think for the most part, these updates should come through the funds that are on hand. If it comes to the point where it gets to a level that's a little dangerous, a little concerning, perhaps a formula that would apply to individual households and the water and sewer fund. But I think the water and sewer fund should be able to handle that. They're very healthy funds. We've had extremely good management of those departments over the years.
Mr. LeGuire.
So you're saying we already bought them and we're trying to figure out how to pay for them now? Is that what you're saying?
The question is that there is that healthy balance in there, and there's a, let me scroll back to it. So question being, would you be in favor of financing the upgrades to the water system and monitors, or should it be paid for directly out of the water and sewer fund balance?
I would be in favor of paying it out of whatever balance we have before we borrow. That would be my, that's how I would do if I had a problem at my home, I would use my emergency fund to fund it and then try and stock back up my emergency fund if I can, if it's something I can afford. If not, then finance, but I would definitely look at both options. But whatever, I would prefer to pay out of my own pocket before I would finance anything.
Mr. Russell.
This issue is still with the Water and Sewer Committee. I know they're looking at how to finance it. We do have healthy balances in our water and sewer funds. And the end result will be examine what's the best way to fund it. Borrowing rates are still low. Is this an appropriate thing to capital asset to float a bond against? Quite honestly, that's a decision that's going to involve the city auditor, Water and Sewer Appropriations Committee. A lot of information would have to be brought to bear in order to really give you a solid answer. Am I against debt financing if it's the appropriate way to go? Absolutely not. Am I okay to pay using our cash balances if that's the appropriate way to go? That's fine, too.
Mr. Wobser.
There's still a lot of information that's got to come forward, as Grant mentioned, about the water and sewer meters. We don't have all the details on that yet. The good news is we have a healthy balance in our water and sewer departments, and they do a great job. We're blessed in that regard. One of the things that we've talked about for several years now is, since we do have cash, is to hold on to that cash by actually issuing debt at very low rates. The debt rates are still in pretty good shape. They're not as good as they were 2 years ago, but we can still go out and borrow at very low rates. Hold on to the cash that we have today, which puts us in a better financial position going forward. But again, when we look at these meters, we've got to look at exactly what we're going to get for our money and how does that help the city going forward.
Okay. Next question. Findlay has been named the top micropolitan community now for 5 years running. What do you believe council's role in that accomplishment is? And we start with you, Mr. LaGuire.
I'm not sure how council is getting us that rating. Do we have to pay for it? Is that one you pay to be on that list? I'm not sure how that... the magazine or the website who gives us that rating. I think that city council can look out for the rights of the individuals, and our low income tax rate in Findlay definitely makes us an attractive city. But I don't see that ranking as being something that's paramount to the government and city council. I don't find that to be, I don't put a lot of weight on that ranking. I feel like it's almost like the one that you have to pay for.
Mr. Russell.
Five-time Micropolitan of the Year is quite an accomplishment. It's never been done before. It's actually an award, a recognition given by Site Selection Magazine. They take a look at the new development that's brought in, number of projects and square feet. It's not paid for, it is earned, and it is earned by hard work and cooperation between all the stakeholders in the city of Findlay. How does city council help that? We started it many a year ago. Actually, when I first was on council about 7 years ago, we passed a Community Reinvestment Act legislation that brought the entire city under the CRA. That was really the springboard that got the development started. Recently, for the Argyle project, a key piece of legislation was the Downtown Design Review District. I had numerous developers tell me they would not look at developing a downtown without a DD, without a design review district in place. And most importantly, we cooperate. We cooperate with all partners in order to bring development into Findlay.
Mr. Wobser.
The way that the city helps in gaining that award is providing solid police, fire, water, sewer, and excellent streets. That's exactly what our government is, that's what we're supposed to do day in, day out. Anything outside of those lines is really extra credit and icing on the cake. If we do those things well and we gain that award, then people want to come here and look at us to bring their businesses here, and that's what's happened. We provided a good place
for people to run their businesses. And the city is very much involved in that, along with the county and other stakeholders, to provide a good, solid basis for people to want to come to Findlay.
Mr. Schindeldecker.
Everything Grant and Jeff have said, I would agree with. Our prime job on the city council when it comes to the Micropolitan Awards and many others we've received is to provide an atmosphere in which business can prosper. This is an important award. It's not something that can be just looked at and said, oh, that's nice. Over the course of the 5 years that we've won this award, 7,000 jobs have been created. 7,000 jobs. That's tax revenue. That's housing. That's new restaurants. That's new motels. It's a lot of things, and it just continues to boom. We do need the support of the city, the county, the university, the hospital situation, the school system, the amenities that are available in this community. And one just leads to the other, and it just steamrolls. And I'm excited to be a proud of part of what we've done and what we will continue to do.
Okay, Steve Dillon has the next two questions. After that, we'll take a two-minute break.
Rezoning can be a hot-button issue. In February, council voted 6-2 to rezone the former site of the St. Michael School on Western Avenue from R3 single-family high-density zoning to M2 multiple-family residential, despite substantial opposition from neighbors living near the site. How do you weigh the competing interest to make sure zoning works for all? Mr. Russell?
Great question. That was a very interesting case. When I talked about doing your homework and listening to constituents, that's a prime case. When you talk to the citizens in that neighborhood, they were worried about too many cars on the street, too many people in that area. They wanted it to be developed nice, and they wanted it to be developed in houses like they lived in, on thin, small lots. Problem is that developers don't build houses on thin, small lots anymore because they can't make money doing it. So without the rezone, that would have remained an empty location. But with the zoning we got and the plan that's put in place, it is not going to have on-street parking. It's all going to be self-contained. And in the construction, the project actually, as planned, is going to have less density, less people, less rooftops, more green space than if it would have been individually developed lots. There was a case where listening to the citizens, what they really wanted, and knowing zoning, that the decision I made, I believe, is serving the best interest of that neighborhood.
Thank you. Mr. Wobser?
That was an interesting case. It was great from a council standpoint because we had a lot of people from the neighborhood came to council and expressed their concerns and interests. And it gave us the opportunity, us being council members, to question those folks and try to get to the bottom of what it was that they were really concerned about. One of the things that I was able to figure out really quick was, you know, what would you like to see there as you asked the neighbors? Well, we'd like a dog park. Well, it's not going to be a dog park. Somebody's going to buy that. They're going to want to develop it and gain some revenue. So we got to the point where we figured out that they didn't want the buildings taller than St. Mike's used to be. And there were some density issues, as Grant talked about. Working with the developer, he came back, made those changes in his plans. It certainly fit what the neighborhood had originally said that they were comfortable with. And this is the type of housing that we're going to continue to need in Findlay. And really, this speaks to a larger problem that maybe we'll talk about later.
Thank you. Mr. Schindeldecker.
This is a prime example of government and the neighborhood working together. As Jeff said, the original plans were not compatible to what a lot of the people thought. The developer met with the people. They've come up with some plans that sound pretty good for most everyone involved. And as Jeff said, it's going to be something. It's not going to be a dog park. By the way, the zoning issue is totally separate from what will go there. We cannot rezone a property with a contingency that only this particular project will go there. One of the two votes against that was from a member of council who indicated she thought the idea was good, but we weren't there yet. That was a complete misunderstanding of how that works. You zone it, and then you work to negotiate what goes on the property.
Okay, thank you. Mr. LaGuire?
I believe that the developer knew how it was zoned beforehand and probably had a pretty good idea of how easy it would be to get it rezoned. I think that the community members were justified in not wanting too much parking going on there. And one of the concerns seemed to have been going from the 2.5 parking spots per unit down to 2. And I believe a lot of the people in that neighborhood do not have driveways. So if you don't have a driveway, the only place to park is on the street. So if the new place doesn't have enough parking for all the residents, their children, and any friends who come and visit, then they'll end up parking on Adam Street or Putnam Street. And then the people who have always lived there and always parked in those spots, they're going to have troubles finding a place to park. So I think that if we're going to rezone it, we need to consider that aspect of it. I don't think going from 2.5 down to 2 parking spaces would be a good idea. Maybe if that was a separate, something that could be looked at for each individual case.
Okay, thank you. Next question. A strategic planning group once considered encouraging all council members to hold town hall style meetings at least once a year within their precincts, but the idea died on the vine. If you are elected or reelected, would you hold town hall meetings? Mr. Wobser?
The original plan to put a strategic planning committee together was my idea. And we started that 2 years ago. And I will admit that I've not pushed that forward as fast as I needed to. And last year was a difficult year for my family, and so it kind of took second place. But to answer directly to your question, the idea of getting city council people out into the community, I think is a good one. I think we've got to find a way to do that. Now, is it actually going and meeting in person? Sometimes that doesn't work in our fast-paced economy today, and I think there's different ways that council members can continue to reach out to the citizens that they represent and get feedback. That is something that we'll continue to encourage, and as we go forward on the strategic planning committee, that we will have something in there that will indeed increase the amount of communication coming into council and into the administration.
Thank you. Mr. Schindler-Decker.
One of the situations that arose as we were considering these town meetings in the different neighborhoods was, do we just go out in the neighborhood and gather people around and say, what do you want? That would provide some answers, but I think some answers to us, but I think we need to provide some answers to them. We kind of came to the conclusion we needed to take a look at what we possibly could do and what kind of a timeline and so forth, and be able to suggest, as we have these meetings, we can do this, 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 this is what it's going to cost, this is how long it's going to take, and with these criteria, what would you like then? That's why it got delayed. We have thought perhaps we might even need a consultant to come up with these suggestions. But it's a two-way street. We can't just ask people without giving them some answers or some criteria.
Okay, thank you. Mr. LaGuire.
I am all for having town hall meetings. I think it is a great way to start a conversation because, let's face it, the people are the government. We would just be your representatives. So I think that's a great way for the representatives to listen to the constituents and find out what's on their heart. I know that it would be, I would definitely do my best to hold one if I am elected, yes.
Okay, thank you.
There's kind of two questions there, if I'm allowed to answer.
Okay.
All right.
Oh,
hey,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Thanks, guys.
I'm sorry.
There's two questions there. One about the town halls, and if we have town halls, I'll be glad to be there. Quite honestly, every day as a council rep is a town hall because citizens are always asking you questions. And one-on-one, two-on-one, they have questions they want to know. But the strategic planning effort and the individual town hall was a kind of a means to an end as a way to bring in valuable citizen input. And in the course of the conversations about strategic planning, they thought that just simply standing out and having individual town halls in the wards would not be effective, and that there is better ways to go about the strategic planning effort. Does the city need a strategic plan? I believe we do. I've had conversations with the current Mayor Mern about it. She's enthusiastic about going forward with the strategic planning efforts and building on what the conversations we started with last year.
Thank you.
And now we'll pause 2 minutes. You're watching the 2019 City Council at Large Forum on UFTV and listening on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We'll be right back.
Your news authority is 1330 WFIN and now at 95.5 FM.
What better way to celebrate Easter than with flowers? Flowers from Sink's Flower Shop and Greenhouse. Imagine one of Sink's beautiful arrangements on your dinner table. Your family will love you for it. Choose from tulips, hydrangeas, lilies, and hyacinths. Remember to order your flowers to celebrate Easter on April 21st. Flowers from Sink's Flower Shop and Greenhouse, 2700 North Main, Findlay. Ask for delivery in Findlay and Hancock County.
Childhood is full of wonder, and we get the chance to relive it with our grandchildren every day. But imagine missing special moments with a grandchild or seeing them through cloudy vision. The Foundation Fighting Blindness can help by providing valuable information about diagnosing and treating AMD. Age-related macular degeneration is the leading cause of vision loss in people 55 and older. But it doesn't have to be. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is driving research and saving sight by providing information about diagnosing and treating AMD. Don't miss a moment of your grandchildren's youthful wonder because of poor vision. Learn more about vision-saving preventions and treatments. Call the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS for a free packet on reversing or managing AMD. Or go to the website fightblindness.org where you can find so much helpful information. Call 1-800-BLINDNESS today. That number again is 1-800-BLINDNESS or fightblindness.org.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
It's the day's first look at the top stories every weekday morning. Hi, this is Gordon Deal, inviting you to join me for This Morning, America's First News. We get down to business weekday mornings at 5 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and now at 95.5 FM.
Your news authority is 1330 WFIN, and now at 95.5 FM.
As we continue here with our council forum at large. And again, this is coming to you live on UFTV on their YouTube channel, as well as on WFIN 1330 AM, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We'll continue with our line of questioning in just a moment. And again, you can look for complete coverage tomorrow in the Courier, as well as on WFIN Radio. And I believe this will be on the UFTV YouTube channel as soon as tonight's festivities conclude, so you can go back and look for that. If you have any questions of the candidates following tonight's forum, be sure to check them out on their various social media channels, or you can talk to them afterward. All right, we're going to continue now with our line of questioning and continue our question and answer center. Again, we have an hour and a half allotted for this. Doesn't necessarily mean we'll go the full hour and a half. We know that we do have a city council meeting coming up later tonight as well. So we'll start with Mr. Schindeldecker on this one. This is for all four of you. For the incumbents, you've touted the need to keep experience on council. Well, Matthias, as a challenger, you've talked about the need for a change on council. Now, these aren't necessarily new election themes. We hear these every year. But why do these themes matter in this particular election cycle? And we'll start with you, Mr. Schindeldecker.
One way or another, we will be electing at least four new members of city council come November. And we will have, however you want to define it, a new or relatively new mayor. It's important that there be some continuity with what we have. All of us, the three of us who have served on council, have benefited from the experience of those who preceded us or sat next to us for a term or two or three. It's invaluable experience. I think it's really necessary that at least a significant number of us are reelected to council because of the experience we have. We need new ideas, no question about that. But it takes a while to really learn the ropes. When I first was on council, I'd spent 40-some years attending meetings, and I learned an awful lot in the first few months, and that's important.
Mr. LaGuire.
Well, I created a Facebook page called 830 East Sandusky Street, which is my address, and I've been detailing some of the things that I have been dealing with the city personally, and I feel that we have been, through permits and taxes, been the least fortunate in our community are the ones who are affected the most by a lot of these laws. So we have a new law where I spoke out against the 6-inch grass law. I don't see how that protects people. And so I was a victim of the 6-inch grass law for my garden. And I just feel that we need people who will represent us fairly, people who will actually listen. And that's my main goal, is to listen to people and to help protect their property rights, their individual rights, that I feel are being taken away by the current council members.
Mr. Russell.
I think experience in this election is important for the reasons Tom mentioned. We are going to have four new council reps and a new administration, or the continuation of the Murren administration. But it's also important to... The experience helps you understand what you can and cannot do on municipal government. In essence, the bread and butter of municipal government is the provision of safety services to the police, fire, and courts, and to maintain public infrastructure, sewer, water, parks, roads, Field of Dream facilities, but also ensure those property rights, everyone's property rights, your property rights, my property rights, your neighbor's property rights. What happens on one property, if it affects everybody else's, It might be legal, but does it make it right? And there's always going to be a conflict in that. And part of the experience of being on council is to be able to work through those issues, dig into them, and give strong, reasoned, firm judgment.
Okay, we'll have Mr. Wobser answer, and then we'll give time for one for a rebuttal answer as well. Mr. Wobser?
The experience certainly does matter in this situation. As Tom mentioned earlier, we're going to have a new administration plus several new council members coming through. I've been involved, my family's been involved in city government for a long, long time. And even though we've been involved with it, you don't know what it takes to get things done until you're actually sitting in the chair and dealing with the day-to-day issues that come through and going through the packets and learning the Ohio Revised Code and how you can do business. It is much different than the way everybody else gets to do business out in the community. So experience certainly does matter. As we look forward with that, I think that we need to simply make sure that everybody's being treated fairly, as Matthias had mentioned, and I think we do a very good job of that, trying to take all considerations into account before decisions are made.
All right. I tell you what, let's make this a follow-up for everybody. We'll start with you, Mr. LaGuire, and we'll talk about balancing the property rights of the individual versus the property rights of the neighborhood. And we'll start with and just your thoughts in that general area, Mr. LaGuire.
Well, if what I'm doing on my property doesn't cause harm or hazard to the rest of the public, then it's really my business, and it's not their business. And then... Forcing homeowner association type laws on the community is going to stifle economic growth. It's going to hurt people. It hurts the least fortunate by creating fines for them when they don't maintain their property to some standard that that was decided by city council. I think that when it comes to maintaining your property, we wouldn't have gotten a referendum petition on the ballot if this wasn't something that was important to the citizens. The citizens want their private property protected, and they do not want to be told by the government how to maintain their property. That is not the role of the government. They are not there to dictate to us how to maintain our personal private property.
Mr. Russell.
The city of Findlay does not have a residential building code. There's no discussion to have a residential building code. There is no HOA type rules for the city of Findlay. The only place where there is any type of maintenance requirement is in the downtown area in the downtown development review district, which, as I mentioned when we talked about economic development, downtown developers found that as a tool that was absolutely critical to the development opportunities in downtown. It's very specific. It has a very specific application in a very specific area. And the board is made up of downtown business owners and property owners, along with citizens. Property rights are a challenge. Your property rights infringing on another neighbor's property rights, then you have that's one of the reasons you have courts. But the state of Ohio, they've said that there's an issue with noxious weeds and high grass lengths. We're simply implementing those laws on a local basis. And
we'll cut you off there. Mr. Wobser.
I certainly appreciate Matthias's libertarian viewpoint. Being mostly libertarian myself, I certainly appreciate that. However, when you buy a property inside city limits, you expect to have yourself, keep yourself to certain standards and along with your neighbors so that you are assured that your property value will maintain itself and continue to appreciate. Normally, we run into situations where property is not being maintained and it's affecting the value of the neighborhood. That's not fair. It's just simply not right, and it falls upon council to try to do something about that. So this is the situation that we fell into here, and what we're simply trying to do is make common sense rules that help everybody that owns property within the city limits to maintain their property values.
Mr. Schindeldecker.
Well, I guess I would have to say I almost completely disagree with Mr. Matthias. With ownership and with property ownership and so on comes responsibility to your neighbors. You cannot put up a steel mill in a residential neighborhood. You can't do a lot of things because of zoning. It just simply... any big deal. Most communities in Ohio have that. We have surveyed a number of these while we were going through all of this. We're probably right about in the middle as those who have a 6-inch or a 10-inch or whatever, or the number of days you have before you have to cut your grass or be fined and so forth. This is common. It's just good neighborhood, being a good neighbor.
All right, we'll give a 1-minute rebuttal, then we're going to move on, and Steve will have the next two questions.
Okay, the noxious weeds, that's false. There's only, I think, 5 on the Ohio Vice Code that are termed, they're noxious weeds, and none of them are on my property. They're very rare. Just because that's what other communities do, that doesn't make it right. I mean, you could make laws that are communistic, totalitarian, dictatorship, and you could say we're doing it because, look, Columbus, they have a law that says your grass can't be taller than 6 inches. Well, that doesn't make it right, and you're not asking, you're forcing. And people who don't comply, they're given another fine, a $250 administrative fee, which that is, there's no basis for that. If the city doesn't want to be the lawnmowers for everybody who doesn't want to mow their lawn, then change the laws. But yeah, the law was just recently changed, and I spoke out against it. So let's not pretend like I bought property in Findlay with that law in place. The law was just made last May, and I spoke out against it, and I'm still against it.
All right, we may revisit the issue further along in the forum, but we're going to continue on for now, and Steve Dillon has the next two questions.
Downtown Findlay traffic and parking are always interesting topics of conversation. What needs to be done to help traffic flow in the area? Do you have concerns about bikes on city downtown streets? I believe we are to Mr. LeGuire. Go ahead.
As far as bicycles on downtown streets, since they're not on the sidewalks, then I think that their only option is to either walk them or ride in the streets. I don't know if that's being enforced right now or not. I think that I grew up in Findlay. There, we used to have mid-block crosswalks, and there's reasons why we took them out. You know, people enjoy those parades that go down Main Street, and so if we look to the past and see the mistakes we've made in the past, like putting in mid-block crosswalks, then maybe we won't make that same mistake. Which they're here to stay, obviously, but I think that we should stop trying to improve our downtown with tax dollars and just let it be the way it is for now.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Russell?
We should never stop trying to improve downtown. The downtown plans that were implemented were not implemented with tax dollars. They were implemented with money that was donated by Marathon Petroleum as a result of their downtown development efforts, or their downtown campus efforts. Am I worried about traffic flow in downtown? Absolutely. People need to slow down and get off their phones so they don't continue to almost hit pedestrians who are legally in crosswalks, either at the corners of the street or at mid-block crossings. But the fact of the matter is, the downtown development efforts, the changes in downtown, are one of the things that helped attract a $31 million redevelopment of the Argyle property. Vis-a-vis bikes, we are working on developing alternative paths for bikes, for through bike traffic to get around downtown. That's what the Corey Street share lines are. We're looking at doing the same thing on East Street. We'll see some more bike development, friendly bike development on Lincoln Street in 2020, I believe it is.
Mr. Webster.
Our downtown is really becoming quite a great destination. And with that, we have more pedestrians, like today. And we still have some of the same old problems that we've always had, right? So 224 comes right down through and turns to the west on West Main Cross. Today, when I was on my way here, there was a semi-truck that had the whole intersection messed up, trying to get through there, people trying to back up. That's difficult. So specifically, to answer your question, Steve, one of the things that we need to do as we go forward, and this would go into our strategic plan, is to, number one, work on finishing an outer belt around Findlay. We're getting pieces of it put into place now. We need to continue to work on that and get it done. And then work with the state to get 224 rerouted out around downtown so that we can get rid of the truck traffic. That will ultimately give us the downtown that we want.
Okay, Mr. Schindeldecker.
As long as Main Street, Main Cross, various streets in the downtown area are part of the state highway system, we cannot ban semi-trucks from them. As Jeff said, we need more of an outer belt. We've got bits and pieces of it. That's going to cost money. It's going to require the state to come up with money. Maybe we can utilize the entire tax increase or gas tax increase that the governor's put on us for that purpose. I'd like to see us be able to take advantage of all of that. That's not going to happen. The downtown pedestrian, it is more pedestrian friendly. Some people don't like various aspects of it, but as Grant said, the Argyle property, and guess what? There's an awful lot of other development taking place in downtown Findlay. Is the pedestrian corridor totally responsible for that? Of course not. But it does, as I've said, in other areas, create an atmosphere for development, and people are taking advantage of us. We should be happy.
Thank you. Last year, Council approved changes to its meeting rules. While relatively few were actually changed, some would appear to have a chilling effect on public participation at Council meetings. Others limit interaction between Council and the administration. Do you believe that the changes that were made improve meetings? Mr. Russell?
I headed the ad hoc committee that made the council the rules changes. A big part of the reason we made the rules changes were because the other ones had just simply been added onto over the years, and they were difficult to follow. In a lot of cases, they had different requirements that kind of contradicted each other. But let's just talk public participation. Council made added two new council requirements or restrictions on public participation. Number one, citizens cannot come into council and give raw sales pitches about purchasing this product or this service. And number two, people cannot come in and lobby for their own personal candidacy for public office. Can you lobby for an issue and ask this council to take a position? Yes, but not an individual candidacy. Those are the only two restrictions that were added to the council rules with this rewrite.
Okay, thank you.
I think the updates were certainly needed. As Grant had mentioned, the rules, quite frankly, that we were working off of had just been retyped over the years. If nothing else, we needed to go back through and reformat them so people could understand them. The part, Steve, that you talked about as far as making a chilling effect on the meetings, I don't think that is founded at all. What we've done is put a little bit more structure into how people can come and speak at council. And that is, quite frankly, for the betterment of all people, so that everybody gets the right amount of time and that all people get to be heard. And also, we've got to be able to continue to maintain decorum in the meeting and continue to move forward as a city. So I think the rules that we're putting into place, the small changes that we've made, are very good and will help us to maintain good decorum and still give people all the time that they need to express their opinions.
Thank you. Mr. Schindeldecker.
Well, after 47 years as news director at WFIN and WKXA, and more than 5 years on city council, I've estimated I've attended 12 to 1,300 city council meetings. Never until the past year have we ever had to have armed, uniformed police officers in our council meeting to maintain decorum. You cannot go before the state legislature, the U.S. House, or the U.S. Senate and talk about anything you want ad nauseum or ad infinitum, however you want to describe it. There's no reason that people should be able to come to council and talk about things that are totally beyond what is being discussed. We had a great discussion, a terrible discussion, as a matter of fact, a few months ago, about a housing code, which nobody had ever even suggested, but somebody got that idea and brought a whole bunch of people to council, most of whom were embarrassed because they were brought there on false pretenses.
Okay, Mr. LeGuire.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Sure. Last year, council approved changes to its meeting rules. While relatively few were actually made, some would appear to have a chilling effect on public participation at council meetings. Others limit interaction between council and the administration. Do you believe the changes improve meetings?
I believe they've improved meetings to the point where they can get them over with in about an hour. But as far as the public's already limited to 4 minutes, so that's understandable too. But when the public is not allowed to direct questions to individual council members, well, then they don't have to be, they're not held accountable for their actions. So what I don't want to be a part of a government that the people in charge don't have to be held accountable for whatever they do. So, and I think it speaks volumes that they needed to bring in security. They thought they needed to bring in security. That means that you must not be doing something right if so many people from the public are showing up to speak out against your actions. So if a lot of people are showing up, maybe you should look at the reasons behind that. And yes, there was talk about a residential code, and that's why so many people showed up to that one meeting. It was discussed in a neighborhood where Mayor Mihalik was there.
Okay, thank you. Any rebuttals, Mr. Russell, Obser, Schindeldecker?
The rules have been in place for a couple of months now. How are the meetings going? Have we stifled public participation? Is the public still being able to be heard? The purpose of council meetings are to do the citizens' business, the city's business. We still entertain and do get public participation. We'll hear from one gentleman tonight. He's already on the agenda. The public is always welcome to come to a council meeting and let us know what you think.
Hold on. Anyone else, Mr. Wobser? Tom? Okay. Briefly?
Yes, we can come, but we're not allowed to ask them questions. So when they vacate a street and you want to ask the reasons why they requested that legislation and they don't answer your questions, they look silly. So they made a law or a rule that you're not allowed to ask them questions anymore. And I guess that would definitely, I mean, if you're not going to be, if you don't have to be held accountable for your actions, you can do whatever you want. I suppose that's probably why they made those changes.
We'll wrap this up one more time with Mr. Russell if needed. No, you're good? Okay, thank you. As we saw last week with the announcement of the development in downtown and the Argyle property and other developments that have been talked about in the downtown area, a lot of times, at least in the world of social media, these are met with a great deal of apprehension. How do you as a council member go about weighing that apprehension versus the continued desire for development in the city? We'll start with you, Mr. Wobser.
That's a great question, Doug.
I aim for one each forum, so I'm glad we got there.
The Findlay's a very conservative town. I think that's exudes or comes forward in our government and in the people that live here. Change is difficult. By and large, anything that we do different is going to be met with some people being upset with us. It's just the nature of the beast. I don't think that's necessarily bad, because what that makes council do is make changes that are very smart and incremental, and it takes us time to get from A to B, much like the downtown district. The changes there went relatively fast, and it upset a lot of people. We're still hearing about parking issues with downtown. But I think that as we continue to look at this, we're going to have to make changes. Our prosperity is bringing us a lot of problems that we're going to have to deal with going forward, and it's going to take change to get those done.
Mr. Schindeldecker.
If you aren't moving forward, you're moving backward. There's no such thing as standing still. The apprehension that I hear about to some of the changes to a very great extent involves parking, and we're aware of that. We're aware that parking has to be a problem. We're also aware of problems with housing. We have several housing developments going on right now at all levels of for all levels of income, from low rent, medium, and some of the townhouses are certainly high rent. Yes, there's apprehension. It's part of the "you're not in my backyard" syndrome, but we do have to try to assure people and let people know what is happening. Even if they don't like it, if they know what is happening, the apprehension should cease.
Mr. LaGuire.
What was the question again? I'm sorry.
Balancing the apprehension of development versus the need for the city to have development.
Well, I think that a lot of this would fall outside the scope of the government. The way the government's most involved in this is, does the city give the city-owned property to the Port Authority so that we don't have to worry about that law where the city can't sell it to an individual without auctioning it? I think that the apprehension is this going to be fair for everybody? Will everybody have a chance to buy that property? Or is it just whoever comes in with the most expensive idea? The apprehension, though, I think it has to do with, is this going to be done in a fair manner? And that's what the city council's job should be, is to make sure that whatever does happen to that property is fair for everyone.
Mr. Russell.
The start of that question was interesting, about talking about Facebook and public perception and social media. That's a whole another can of worms, and something that really across the nation there's a lot of discussion about how that affects government. And it actually does have an effect on government, and I don't think a lot of it's too good. The way I approach it is, I look at the issue, I study the zoning changes, I study the individual issue, I listen to the concerns of citizens who want to have conversations with me about what their concerns are, and I explain to them my philosophy and how I see it and which direction I'm going to go. We do have a housing shortage in town, as evidenced by the fact that so many people drive into Findlay in order to work. And the only way to take care of that housing shortage is to build more housing.
Okay. We've talked a lot tonight about zoning. We've talked a lot about codes and there not being a building code in Findlay outside of the downtown development area. A lot of that has to do with the physical appearance of properties. But what we haven't talked about is codes when it talks about safety. Do you believe that Findlay has adequate codes when it comes to properly building safe housing in the community? And I believe we start with you on this one, Mr. Schindeldecker.
We have tried several times over a number of years to establish a building code or a housing code or safety codes. We do have safety codes for plumbing, electricity, and so on and so forth. The problem with codes, and I'm not totally opposed to a building code, but what I have seen is something that started out with discussions for a building code that was about this thick, and it got thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker, that almost would tie the hands and the arms of anybody who's trying to do any development. I don't see codes in the near future. If there was an effort, I would not be totally against it, but I would certainly want to include some codicils that, for example, a homeowner could do X number of dollars worth of changes other than plumbing and electricity without going through the code. And with landlords, the same thing.
Mr. LaGuire.
I think that we're governed by Ohio Revised Code when it comes to building codes, and our city seems to be pretty safe so far, governed by that. I don't think any have collapsed on anybody, and I don't think that we're in any immediate danger. So I do not think that our city needs to expound upon what the state has already done. I would be opposed to any sort of maintenance or building code for residential homeowners. I'm opposed to the one downtown. I don't think that we should have a board telling property owners downtown that, hey, your paint's chipped. You got to fix that. You got to take out those boards and put windows in. I think that should be left up to the homeowner. As long as it's not a hazard to everyone else, they should get to do what they want to with their own property. I mean, if we're not paying for it, we really shouldn't be telling them what to do with it. That's how I feel about it. If you want to pay for some updates at my house, we can talk about it. That's for sure. I would be open to that.
Mr. Russell.
The city of Findlay does have a commercial building code for residential units. I believe that's four units and above, so a fourplex and to a multifamily development. And also the commercial buildings, obviously, for any businesses. That's Wood County provides the building, the commercial inspection services for Hancock County. I think that's working quite well. On the residential side, I don't see any pressing need for residential building code. Findlay has done well enough over the years. Quite honestly, you don't build houses like they used to. I know that because I live in a 100-plus-year-old house. But I think what we have works quite well for properties that do become unsafe, potentially after fire. We have public nuisance laws through Ohio Revised Code that allows us to take care of safety concerns.
Mr. Wilkshire. The commercial code does, I think, protect the people that probably need protected the most when it comes to residents in Findlay. So I think that takes care of it in residents with four or above on the commercial side. I also believe, like Tom said, that if we were to implement a building code, those things start out very well-natured but tend to build into monoliths that stop people from wanting to do business here. I think we're doing okay with the way that we've got it done now with the help from Wood County, and I think we can continue along that path and still keep all of our citizens safe.
Okay. Steve Dillon will ask the final two questions of tonight's forum, and then we will get to our closing statements.
The city tax department has offered a unique way of collecting taxes from some businesses and some individuals for several years now. Some pay quarterly estimates, while others are allowed to defer payments until later in the year. Do you believe this process is still needed? I'll start with you, Mr. LaGuire.
I think that this process is not spelled out so that anybody who wants to just go and apply for it, they can. If we're going to allow people to defer, then it needs to be something where everyone has that opportunity. I don't think that anytime the government allows select few people to do something like that, it's not fair for everyone. So I would say if we are going to do it, then it should be something that anybody who wants to apply for that it has the opportunity. I'm out of everyone here. I think Mr. Schindeldecker is retired. I'm the only one who works and is not employed by Marathon. I do have to pay my quarterly tax payments. So I think that it'd be best if everybody does it. If it's available to everyone, then I think it's okay. And if it's not, then I say we stop the practice.
Okay, Mr. Russell.
Nobody gets their taxes deferred. All taxes are paid when due. With the loss look back, some people will have income in one quarter that will be offset by losses in the next quarter, and their net tax at the end of the year is zero, or would get nullified. And in those cases, based on the history of the taxpayer, the income tax department says that we will true up those folks at the end of the year, at the end of their tax year, when taxes are due. When the state of Ohio started their collecting business taxes and charging the city 1% for the purpose of doing it, this ability to work closely with our taxpaying customers in the city offers us an opportunity to keep more folks paying the city of Findlay directly and keep saving us money in the process.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Wobster?
This is certainly a topic that's gotten a lot of discussion over the years, and rightfully so. I think that we need to continue to look at this. When Grant says that all taxpayers ultimately do pay their taxes, that is absolutely correct. But what may happen is they may not pay them based on the quarterly schedule that they have because of the potential for an offset later on. This was put into place so that the city would not have the potential for a very large refund. Now, that made a lot of sense when we didn't have much cash laying around. Made sense, right? We didn't want a big refund from a big corporation that we could not pay back, which is what had happened. I think we're past that now, and to me, this is a cash flow issue. I would much rather see people pay by the rules, and then if we do have to refund them, we can because we've got the cash to do that. And I think we could, if it's still a concern with the tax director, and if we do have to refund them, we can because we've got the cash to do that. And I think we could, if it's still a concern with the tax director and with the administration, we can easily put in a cash balance, an account, to make sure that we have money there that will take care of any refund that we might have to make.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Schindeldecker?
This tax deferment, if you want to call it that, that's controversial in and of itself, happened in about 2008 when the whole country went through a recession. And we were glad to have that because we got bailed out by some of our big taxpayers at that time. Do we still need it? Perhaps not. I can't understand that dealing with corporate taxes when you are in a global market, and we should be thankful we have several companies that are, can be a nightmare. Not everything is defined the same way. I do agree, actually, with all three, including Mr. Mathias. If we are going to continue this, we need to have some criteria as to who can apply for it and what criteria need to be involved. I would support that. I also am afraid I kind of think this has become a millstone around our neck. And if there was a strong effort to do away with it altogether, I would probably have to agree with that.
Okay, well, let's wrap this up with flood control. While the bulk of the flood mitigation rests with the county, what are your thoughts about a potential second benching project in the city? And then a second part to the question, what do you think should be done with the open space on Main Street north of the Blanchard River? Mr. Russell.
If additional benching, and I think you're talking about it east of Main Street on the north side of the river, if it makes sense and it has it's cost effective and effectively takes more properties out of the floodplain, yes, let's investigate it and look at doing so. For the properties north of the river, boy, what wonderful opportunities you have. And quite frankly, the discussions have started about the fact that you start to have a green greenway connecting Riverside Park all the way over to Swale and to Broad Avenue. The recreational opportunities are plentiful. Some exciting opportunities that are available. And the way we are going to approach this is the way we approach all issues in this community, is collectively working together with the Hancock Park District, with the county, with the city, with the schools, with the universities, with all community partners to put together a plan and then execute the plan. Wonderful, wonderful opportunities.
Thank you. Mr. Webster?
We need to continue to move forward with flood mitigation. I think that the benching, additional benching would be a good thing. The plan that was put out by the commissioners and has been being pushed forward by Brian Robertson, Commissioner Robertson, I think is outstanding. And we're finally coming to a consensus with the county and the city to find a way to be able to get that done. And I think we're ultimately going to at least get to a point where the city isn't completely shut down when we have a flood event. The open property, I think, is an interesting opportunity also. The way that all those properties were purchased or came to us in different ways, came to the county in different ways, in different programs that were used, and the way that they can then be used again has to be looked at. It's kind of a patchwork. It's not just simply as easy as saying, hey, we're going to put a concert venue here, because the property is divided up and that can't necessarily be done. So there's a lot of work to be done there, but great opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Schindeldecker.
I'm very hopeful that the benching project will work, and if it does, we ought to continue in other locations. I'm very thankful that we were able to come up with this plan and keep the Hatfields and McCoys on both on the same side. I think the rural community and the urban community are on board with this plan, and if it works, I think we will have other opportunities. I, too, agree that the property north of the river and east of Main Street is a wonderful opportunity. As Jeff said, it's come from different ways. If you bought property with money out of this pocket, you can do this. If you bought property out of this pocket, you can do something else, but can't do this. In the long run, some of the property that we can't develop at all may become developable, if that's the word, if it is taken out of the floodplain. I think immediately we should start looking at least putting that in grass, and maybe having a boogie on Broadway or the Riboff or projects such as that. That would be a wonderful thing for this summer. We could do it that soon.
Thank you, Tom. Mr. Lickwire?
Well, for flood mitigation, I'm so happy that we're finally doing something now. And I know I saw that we're going to give StanTech another $82,000 to study to see if more benching would be beneficial. We know it would. I would really like to see some cooperation with our city engineers, our county engineers, our state engineers, the engineers in Putnam County, the engineers in Ottawa. There's a lot of engineers who are paid via tax dollars. And I think it's wonderful that StanTech has come up with so many solutions. And I feel like if we were to get our engineers together, they might be able to come up with something also that would be beneficial. That other property, I think we would have to look at a forecast, like 5 years, what we see for that property to the north of the river, maybe a 10-year plan. We definitely don't have to do anything with it now. I mean, planting grass would definitely be a good first step, but make sure it's mowed below those 6 inches.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, we've reached the end of our question and answer portion of today's forum. We'll get now into the closing statements. We're going to go in opposite order of the opening statements. So, Mr. Schindeldecker, the floor is yours.
Well, before we look forward, I'd like to look back just a little bit. Dr. Lyman Hall was a delegate to the Continental Congress from the state of Georgia. When he first arrived in Philadelphia, his colleague said, "Where do you stand on independence?" He said, well, I'm perplexed. The people of Georgia seem to be against it. I'm for it. For the time being, I think I should stand with the people of Georgia. The night before the crucial vote on independence, Dr. Hall came to John Adams and said, I've changed my mind. I will vote for independence. Mostly because of a quotation I remember from, of all people, a member of the British Parliament, Sir Edmund Burke. A representative owes the people not only his industry, but his judgment. And if he betrays them if he sacrifices it to their opinion. What do I bring to the table as a city councilman? I think I have a pretty good read on what the people want, and what the people want isn't necessarily always what the people need. We needed a development in Main Street, for example. We didn't have all of what we'd planned. Some of the things people do not like, still do not like, but so many have told me, you know, it came out a lot better than I thought it would. And as I mentioned earlier, guess what? We got a lot of development in downtown Findlay, and it's partly due to the atmosphere that we have created. I think I also have an ability to look forward. When I first came on council after attending over 1,000 meetings, I thought I knew it all. I knew a lot of the procedure. What I didn't know was that you have to think 3 or 4 or 5 steps ahead all the time. A couple of examples, one with the health department. After over a half a century of trying to merge the city and county health departments, we were able to do so during the time I've been on council. A lot of people were involved in that.
All right, it's 2 minutes. Go to Mr. Wobser.
That was 3.
My understanding was that
it was 2, Tom.
It was
okay.
2.
Yeah, that's...
I apologize.
Yeah.
Do I get to at least do a weather forecast?
If there's time afterwards, perhaps. Mr. Wobser.
I want to thank Steve and Doug. That was outstanding questions, gentlemen. It was of the debates I've been involved in, that was certainly the best, and really got into some great conversation, great questions. We've come a long way in the amount of time that I've been on council. The city has, but we still have a long way to go. And there's a lot of very tough decisions to be made. Flood mitigation, downtown redevelopment, and the good news is we're in a good fiscal or good financial standing right now, but we have to remain in that. Now, we have been the beneficiaries of a good financial standing now for the last 5 years. That's not going to last forever. What we do know for sure is the economy eventually is going to go down the other way. The question is, how do we handle that as a city and as a community? So from my perspective, the one thing that I will always continue to look at is to make sure that we are, as Tom mentioned, looking forward 3, 4, 5 years to make sure that we can weather those storms. At the end of the day, we still have to provide fire protection, water, sewer, police protection, all those basic things that the city has to provide. And no matter what the economy is, we always have to do those things, and we have to do them in a financially and fiscally conservative manner. So, as I started, I think experience does matter, and when I ask for your vote, I'm asking for you to return me back to council, because my experience that I've gained over the last 4 years, I think will play well as we know we're going to get into tougher financial times so that we can weather that storm and continue to grow as a city and as a community.
Mr. Russell.
Well, thank you to WFIN, the Courier, University of Findlay once again. And I agree, Doug and Steve, fantastic job. Thanks to everyone who showed up tonight and is listening. Always appreciate folks who are interested in their city. The city hasn't achieved its successes by accident. It's a result of hard work and cooperation. City departments working together, focused on delivering value for their citizens. The city cooperating with the county, the ag and business communities to take on flood mitigation. Public and private partnerships and cooperations that result in nationally recognized economic development, and including the recently announced $31 million redevelopment of the Argyle property, an absolute game changer for downtown. In all of this, there's no I. It's only us. It's all of us, the whole citizens, all the citizens, working hard, working together. Hard work and cooperation is how we got to be successful. Hard work and cooperation is how we must continue to approach all future challenges. I'm going to do the quick ad lib. My wife is going to get nervous here, but you're right. Dr. Lyman Burke, he talked about in 1776, he's one of the deciding votes that created this country. And people ask me why I serve, and a lot of it is back to what happened on July 4th, 1776, and Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, of the people, by the people, for the people. Here's my I statements. My promise to you, the citizens of Findlay, it's the same ones I've made every time I've run for office. I'll continue to work hard and work cooperatively with anyone who's focused on improving the lives of all the citizens of Findlay. I'll continue to give you my best efforts, my time, and my energy. I'll continue to do my homework, and I'll continue to communicate. Read my 419 on my Facebook page, contact me, and I will respond. My name is Grant Russell, and I appreciate your vote.
Mr. LaGuire.
I'm running for city council because I feel that not everybody in Findlay is being represented equally, and I think that I could do that. I'm ready for that responsibility. I understand I don't have the experience that they do. But I don't know how the experience of being on that side of city council. I have experience being on the other side of city council. I have experience coming to city council meetings and speaking out. And I was represented by someone who wasn't even in my ward, Holly Frischi. She came out along with Tim Watson and Mr. Niemeyer, and they came out and they did a tour of my property along with Mr. Slough. I want to represent the people like they did, where they actually came out, they saw what was going on, and they made an informed decision, and they voted against the vacation of the street behind my property. And so if we didn't have to get a referendum petition, and none of that had ever happened, I wouldn't be here today. I'm here because I wasn't treated fairly, and I want everyone to be treated fairly. And that's what I would do. I would treat everyone fairly, and I would not be making laws which would cause undue burdens on our citizens. And I'm for repealing any laws which are causing undue burdens, and that's the whole reason I'm here. I want to give the people a choice. We could keep doing things the way it's been going, or we can look to the future and get back our rights that we are all granted by God. And so that's my goal. That's why I'm running. And as far as I'm concerned, I know you can vote for three, but just vote for me.
Okay. Well, we want to thank our candidates for coming out tonight for an hour and a half forum. And if you want to give them one more round of applause, we'd welcome that. Thank you so much for joining us. We'd also like to thank the Courier for coverage in print, UFTV for televising the forum. And again, you can see this on their YouTube channel following the conclusion. And of course, here on WFIN on 1330, 95.5 FM and WFIN.com. Remember, early voting is underway now, and Election Day coming up in the first Tuesday of May. For Steve Dillon, I'm Doug Jenkins, wishing you a good night from the University of Findlay.
Thanks for joining us for tonight's Political Forum, brought to you on WFIN by Sink's Flower Shop and Greenhouse. The preceding has been a special presentation of your news authority, 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and now at 95.5 FM.